Okay, so let's see. Let's get your clickers out. So which cell has serotonin and hyaluronic acid in its granules? I'm not going to take too much time waiting for you, or you won't make it. So it's a basophil. The other things in there are heparin and histamine. Okay, which cell is the most effective in killing Mycobacterium, Brucella, Legionella, Rickettsia, Toxoplasma? Okay, it's a monocyte. No cheating. Okay, in degranulation, which granules fuse first with the phagosome? We haven't had it yet, so I was going to see if I need to even cover it. If y'all get it right, I don't need to. Right? Okay, it's secondary. Okay, the white count was 20,000 with 60% lymphocyte differential. What's the most likely cause? This is going to depend. Depends on the age. Depends on what kind of lymphocytes they are. So we're going to go into this one. Okay, we're going to talk about phagocytosis just for a minute or two. And we don't want to go into detail in this because in immunology, we studied this in gruesome detail. All I'm going to go do is back through it just a little bit and talk about the PMNs and the involvement. So if we have PMNs floating around in our blood, they're the phagocytes. They're the ones that usually do this. So the first thing they have to do is to come up to the capillary endothelial cells, and they have to kind of spread out on those endothelial cells, and then they go through the endothelial cells between them and get into the tissues. So what tells them to go out to the tissues is called chemotaxis. So there's some signal that's out in the tissue that's released that says we need some help out here, send the army. And so they have to be attracted to that area. So whatever it is that sends them there, and there are lots of different things, but remember that bacteria are coated with antibodies, with complement, and it makes them more delicious to be engulfed, right? So that's called opsonization. And so this bacteria that's out there, probably with the antibody in combination or complement, makes it possible for this phagocyte to come and find it. So the next thing that happens is it recognizes that that is the bacteria that needs to be engulfed, and it will go up and it will use its pseudopods and surround the bacterium. And as it does that, then the outer part of the PMN folds in and surrounds that bacterium, and that's known as a phagosome. It's just the whatever it's phagocytized. And then the next thing that happens is that the specific granules will fuse with the phagosome and dump all their contents in there. And then the primary granules, or the azurophilic granules, will come up and dump their contents in there. And so the contents of both of those granules will be dumped into this phagosome so that it's possible to kill the bacteria. So when we're talking about phagocytosis, remember that the granulocytes are the primary ones, but also monocyte macrophages do the same thing. So we have chemotaxis that calls them over to that area, and that can involve a lot of things. It, when we think about it, it's antigens or complement system, C3b and C5a. And then the fact that this bacterium has been made really delectable by the attachment of antibodies and also complement. So that's the opsonization. And then it ingests, and then your cells degranulate. So the antibodies in the complement then cause the release of these chemotactic factors, and that PMN has to adhere to the vessel and enter into the tissue through diapedesis. So there are things that will enhance that, lactoferrin or complement C5A. And then that PMN recognizes the bacterium antibody complement complex and ingests it. And then it forms the phagosome. So then the specific granules fuse first and then the primary granules second. So this whole thing then, since they've dumped their lysozyme in there, is called a phagolysosome because it has not only the bacteria but also the contents of those granules. So the granules then are important because they contain all the things that are going to kill this bacteria. So they have enzymes, they have free radicals like superoxide, or they have hydrogen radicals or the OCl radicals, and this is what's going to kill that bacterium inside of that phagolysosome. So we have lysozyme, remember, in the specific granules, and that will break down the cell wall on the bacteria. We have lactoferrin that's present. What that does is to tie up some of the cations so that it the bacteria can't reproduce. And then we have some cationic proteins that will disrupt those membranes of the bacteria. So there are all things in there that are killing these bacteria. So the thing we want to talk about a little bit more than immunology is what happens in the cell. And I don't know if they cover this a lot in immunology, but it becomes pretty important in a PMN. So it's called either an oxidative or a non-oxidative process by which they're going to kill these bacteria. So oxidative, of course, means that you're dependent on oxygen. So it's oxygen dependent. And the process that happens in the cell, the PMN, is called a respiratory burst. Now, there are two kinds of respiratory bursts. One that involves myeloperoxidase, which is the main enzyme in which granule? Primary. So it depends on that. Or there can be another respiratory burst that is not dependent on myeloperoxidase. And then there are those mechanisms that doesn't matter if you have oxygen there or not, so it's called non-oxidative. And just the fact that in the phagolysosome, the pH is quite low. So the low pH helps kill the bacteria, and then we have some of these cationic proteins that hook up with the bacteria like lactoferrin. So let's go through the respiratory burst in the cell. So what happens here is that we have a dormant plasma enzyme system that's called NADPH oxidase. So if we have oxygen and we have NADPH, then we get this superoxide plus NADP plus hydrogen. And then in turn, we can generate hydrogen peroxide from that. So if we take the two oxygen plus the two hydrogen and we add superoxide dismutase to speed it up a little, it'll happen spontaneously, but it's not very fast. Then we produce H2O2. And the thing about it is, in micro, I remember learning that H2O2 is the thing that keeps all the bacteria from being able to reproduce, but those aren't really the very potent killers. The superoxide and the hydrogen peroxide can be oxidants, but they need to be converted to an even more powerful lethal oxidant than just H2O2. So this is how we do it. We use the myeloperoxidase that's released by the specific granules. So if you take the H2O2, in the presence of chloride plus that myeloperoxidase, it gives you a hypochlorite ion. And if you look at that, that hypochloric ion is 50 times more bactericidal than just H2O2. So it's a much more powerful killer. So in order to have that, you've got to have myeloperoxidase. But if you don't have myeloperoxidase, we have another backup system, and it's called the myeloperoxidase independent process, or it's called the Haber-Weiss. And this way, what you do is you take the H2O2 plus the oxygen and some other peroxide compound, but usually the iron that's there in the lactoferrin, and you produce a hydroxyl radical that's an OH radical, and that's very powerful to kill those bacteria. So the two radicals are much more powerful than the H2O2 at all. So that's the thing we need.
Hydroxyl radical, how much longer is it compared to
H2O2? I don't know if I've ever seen a figure, but it's more powerful than just H2O2. Okay, so we have to have enzymes then. So these phagocytes have to have the enzymes that are going to be there. So you have superoxide dismutase that reduces the superoxide. And this is, it keeps the H2O2 levels and the other levels down so that you don't auto-digest the whole cell. And then you have to have the glutathione peroxidase and catalase. And what that does is, again, to control those peroxide levels. So this shows you what happens. We have a pathway, or a shunt, it's called. It's called the hexose monophosphate shunt. Remember memorizing that a few times? And it's stimulated by the NADP that's produced when we're making H2O2. So if you look at GSH, what that is reduced glutathione and then oxidized glutathione. So we have this shunt that keeps the balance between reduced glutathione and oxidized glutathione. So it has to have this hexose monophosphate shunt in order to do that. So when we start talking about some of these diseases, we'll talk about the hexose monophosphate shunt and the Emden-Meyerhoff and all that kind of thing. So what I'm trying to do right now is just tell you that these little PMNs are amazing because they have all this built in them. And so it's just amazing how it all happens. So they have then the ability to kill the bacteria either through the presence of oxygen or not. They have backup systems. So if we don't have oxygen there, they can still work. Not as good, but they can still do it. So this is kind of a picture of a PMN. So there's the bacteria where it phagocytizes it. You dump your primary granule contents onto it, the phagolysosome. Then you dump your secondary, and you produce those radicals, which then are going to kill that bacteria. Okay, then we have a killed bacteria, and all it has to do is to go vomit it outside of itself, and it's ready to go again. So what's the end product of oxidative myeloperoxidase-dependent reactions? Okay, so why did you put hydrogen peroxide? So if you go back, where is it? Okay, so if we have myeloperoxidase, it's going to go to the hypochlorite, right? So it takes the H2O2 and goes a little bit further. Okay. So are there things where this doesn't function? Of course. It's where we get all the fun diseases that we see. So there is a condition called chronic granulomatous disease. And this is an X-linked autosomal recessive. You see it then in males. And what you see is that these people have recurrent pyogenic infections, so pus-producing infections. So the problem with these kids is that they don't have or can't activate that membrane NADPH oxidase. And so they don't have this metabolic burst, this respiratory burst in the phagocytes. Therefore, they don't have H2O2 that's generated. So the only way they can kill bacteria would be the non-oxidative way. And so that isn't effective sometimes in all bacteria. So the catalase-positive organisms get phagocytized, but they don't die because there's no way to kill them. And so they wall these off, and this is called granuloma, when you wall something off. So they phagocytize just fine, but they can't kill the bacteria, and it's usually the catalase-positive ones. So these people have lifelong recurrent infections. So they ingest the microorganism, but they, if you were to take those neutrophils and split them apart, put them on a petri dish, they would still grow. So they have no way of killing them. They can wall them and swallow them, but they can't kill them. So these bacteria then become distributed throughout the body because the bloodstream is carrying these PMNs. And so you get abscesses and granuloma formation. So again, if it's X-linked, it's in a male that we see it. And so these kids have swollen lymph nodes, they have enlarged spleens and livers. Wherever these bacteria are trying to be trapped and form granulomas, then you get this increase in size of organs. So the clinical picture is that usually they have abscesses, they have eczema, their lymph nodes are swollen, they even become pussy lymph nodes because of all these bacteria. They have respiratory problems because of all the bacteria infections that they have. And it's very often they become septic, which means that they have bacteria in their blood as well because they can't kill them. And so you see a child that has swollen lymph nodes, swollen liver, swollen spleen, lots of infections. So that's called chronic granulomatous disease. So the problem is they don't have this metabolic burst. Okay, there's also one that's called Jobe syndrome. And it's called Jobe syndrome because what you see in the patient is boils. So you remember boils are usually staph infections. And they also have an increase in IgE when you measure that. Their problem is they can't get the neutrophils there. They have abnormal chemotaxis with the microtubules. So they can't get to where the bacteria are. So it's a problem with the microtubules. We also have one that's called lazy leukocyte syndrome, which means that they have the same kind of problem. They can't get to the bacteria. But in these patients, their IgE is not increased. It's either normal or decreased. So that's the only difference. So lazy leukocyte and Jobes, they can't get to where they need to be. We also have one that's called Chediak-Higashi syndrome. This is an autosomal recessive problem, and again, they get real severe pyogenic infections. But they have other problems as well. So they have albinism. So if you look at their eyes, they look like an albino, so they're really light-colored or pinkish. And they have decreased chemotaxis in their PMNs. They have dysfunction and fusion of the primary granules. So the primary granules can't dump into the phagolysosome. So they can't put their enzymes in there. Okay, we also have problems sometimes with G6PD deficiency. This is the enzyme that's involved in the hexose monophosphate shunt. So if you don't have that enzyme, it looks a lot like kids that have chronic granulomatous disease. But the problem is they have G6PD deficiency and they can't run the hexose monophosphate shunt. So that's a whole separate disease and we'll talk about that one later. There are people that don't have complement. So they have a complement deficiency, and of course, if you don't have complement, you can't make the bacteria really delicious. So they don't go to take care of the bacteria, so you have a decreased phagocytosis. Okay, there are people that can't make myeloperoxidase. So if you have a myeloperoxidase deficiency, you don't have that myeloperoxidase-dependent process. So they're going to have trouble with some infections, but especially yeast infections. So that's candida. You know that by now, right?
How can you test for these? I can see glucose 6 phosphate, but
yeah, it's not easy. I'll show you some of them. We can test for G6PD. We can test for Shetia Kagashi because we can tell it from the cells. Okay, one of the things we can do is to test generally to see if bacteria, if the respiratory burst takes place. So we use what's called a nitrile blue tetrazoleum dye reduction test, and we call it an NBT. So what you do is you take the patient's blood that has the phagocytes in it. You then offer that phagocyte some Staph aureus. So you just give them some Staph aureus. And if they are functioning normally, they're going to get all excited about ingesting a Staph aureus. And so they go through their respiratory burst. And so that increases the cell's respiration, and the hydrogen that's produced in that respiratory burst gets transferred to a nitrile blue tetrazoleum, which is a dye. It's violet when that happens. So it is a way of looking at that. So here is an NBT test. So this is a phagocyte that we would look at. It's been offered some Staph aureus, and we want to know if it's gone through its respiration process. So this one is a negative, because that phagocyte has no crystal tetrazoleum blue inside of it. So we would say it's a negative test.
So that's the bad one.
That's a bad thing. If it's able to go through its respiratory burst, then it can transfer its hydrogens to the tetrazoleum blue. And these are our phagocytes again, and now you can see they have that violet color in them. So this is a positive test, because now we've got formazan that's the color, the dye color. So it tells us that that cell's been able to ingest and go through the respiratory burst. So that's one test we can do. It's called an NBT stain. Another thing we could do is to take our phagocytes, offer them the Staph aureus, wait a while, then digest the membrane or the cell, the cellular part of the phagocyte, just lyse them and see if the Staph aureus are still viable. If they've killed them, they're not going to be able to grow up, right? If they haven't killed them, we should be able to grow them on some media. So this is known as a bacterial killing test. So we just see if the phagocyte has been able to kill the bacteria. So that's two ways we see whether or not a cell can kill that bacterium. So if we're looking at a patient where we think this might have happened, that we're not effectively killing bacteria, we do our CBC. Probably if they have an infection, the CBC's, the white cell count's going to be high, right? So then what we can do is we can culture to see if they're septic. So we just take a blood culture and grow what's over there. We look at the history of the patient to see if they have recurrent infections. If that's true, we're probably going to want to do an NBT test to see if they're actually able to kill the bacteria. If they're not able to kill them, we'll get an NBT test that's negative, and then they have chronic granulomatous disease. So which defect matches the following description? X-linked swollen lymph nodes, recurrent pyogenic infections. Hey, chronic granulomatous disease. Okay, we're going to look at abnormalities in white cells. So you already remember all your red cell abnormalities because they're on this test too, right? Why are you laughing? Okay, let's go through some of the abnormalities you see with white cells. Okay, we said that segmented neutrophils should have about 5 lobes. Okay, 3 to 5. If a seg has more than, it has 6 or more lobes, it's called a hypersegmented neutrophil. And that happens in B12 or folic acid deficiency. So you remember the red cells that go with B12 of folic acid deficiency? Oval. Macrocyte. Asynchrony, so they're megaloblasts if they have a nucleus. So here is a hypersegmented seg. So you see a normal lymphocyte, and if you count the segments, hopefully you get 6 or more. That's hypersegmented. Okay. Another abnormality where you look at segmented neutrophils is called a Pelger-Hewitt anomaly. Why this happens, we don't know, but these people inherit this disorder. And so all of their segs look like this. They have 2 lobes. Okay, they look like eyeglasses. So they call them pince-nez cells. The old spectacles that used to sit on the nose. Okay, so this is a pince-nez cell. There can also be a variety where these people can only make round nucleus in their seg. It's not a seg, PMN. How's that? Those are called Stottmeister variety. So these are both inherited anomalies. They don't have anything wrong. They can still phagocytize. They're just fine. The only problem is if you go into the lab, they draw your blood, do a differential on you, and you see all these cells with the pince-nez, and you get 60% of them, and you've had something wrong with your stomach and you think you got a pain there. We don't want anybody to call these bands, because if it's a band, they're going to rip out your appendix or something, thinking that you have a shift to the left. So you have to be really careful. So this is a pince-nez, so it looks like spectacles, okay? But it's otherwise just a regular old neutrophil. And this is the Stottmeister variety. So it's just completely round. But can you see this, the granules? I mean, they are PMNs, but it's real rare. But it's an inherited disorder, so you're not going to have anything wrong with the patient. You just don't want to call them bands. Yes, did you have a question?
Yeah, so I guess the question I'm going to ask is, the Stottmeister is a type of Pelger-Hewitt.
So you can have Pelger-Hewitt, Stottmeister, or pince-nez.
What does that mean?
That means you got 2 abnormal genes, so you don't make the 2, you make a round one. Okay. There are things that we have to be careful that we don't call Pelger-Hewitt. They look like Pelger-Hewitt, only they're not. These are called Pelgeroid. Oid means like, right? Okay, Pelgeroid cells are 2 lobes, but the way you tell it apart from a pince-nez is that they usually are degranulated. They don't have as many granules. And this is important because these kinds of cells occur in malignant conditions. So this person's going to have a malignancy. So we're talking about leukemias or myelodysplastics. But they look a lot like pince-nez, only they don't have the granulation. Let's choose the last one.
How common is the pince-nez?
I don't know a percentage.
But not very?
Not very.
So if we all of a sudden saw these, we would want to take a good look.
You want to take a good look at the granules. You can't really see them too much there. So they're degranulated.
Is sometimes when we've been doing the dips, I haven't been able to see them on the granules on the PMS. But could you, like, re-dye it to make sure there's no granules?
Sure.
Or?
Uh-huh. Okay. You mean stain it?
Yeah. That's the word.
Okay. Okay, we talked about toxic granulation yesterday. It's an indication of infection, right? Something's going on in that person that they're really making really heavy granules. So toxic granulation tells you that you have a decreased mitotic division or that the primary granules that are in that cell have fused together. So it makes a really big granule. So if you have a cell where the primary granules are increased in number or they're immature and they stain where you normally wouldn't see them stain because they lose their membranes and they don't stain, this produces toxic granulation. So toxic granulation means the patient probably has an infection and that cell has really gone through mitotic divisions fast or something happened to fuse those primary granules. So here is a PMN that has toxic granulation. So you see how heavy the granules are in this. There's other signs that we're going to look for to see that it's toxic. But these are just granules in the PMN. You know it's a segmented PMN because there you go. But this toxic, you need to note that because it indicates there's something going on.
So is this what we see in Chediak and Gaskin?
No. We'll get there. Okay, this is toxic granulation indicating infection.
I guess I have a hard time distinguishing that in a basophil setting.
No, basophils are much bigger, and they cover the nucleus. Remember, you can't even see the nucleus in a basophil. And you're going to look for other signs of infection as well. These are called sessile bodies. Okay, a sessile body is just kind of a nuclear appendage. See these things right here? See how they stick out? Okay, in a woman's PMN, they do have one appendage on the end if they're a normal XX. It's called a bar body because you inactivate every X chromosome above one. So you can tell a PMN from a woman as opposed to a PMN from a man because the women have a little bar body there. But these are little tiny appendages. Those are not bar bodies. You'd have to have a female that had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 X's to have that. So you know that's not possible, right? So these are called sessile bodies. Indicates infection. Okay, if you look at this smear, can you see that this is toxic granulation? See how heavy it is? See how dark they are? Okay, what are these things? Sessile bodies. This.
So what is actually occurring that causes those little sessile bodies we're talking about?
We're talking about mitosis that's going on, abnormality is fast, it's in the bone marrow, they're shipping them out.
Wait, are histones not correctly laying your abdomen?
That or the mitotic spindles are stuck together or something. Okay, the other thing we're going to look for is Dooley bodies. Dooley, we say in America, but it's a umlaut over the O, if you spell it right. And sometimes I can't find it on PowerPoint, so we'll just say Dooley, okay? So what we're looking at here will be ribosomes or rough endoplasmic reticulum. And again, the cell's just geared up to produce lots of cells. So what we do is we're going to see Dooley bodies that are these ribosomes. What color does RNA?
Blue.
Blue, okay. So what we're going to look for are blue inclusions. Okay, right here is a blue inclusion. And maybe right here. But you can see that this has tucked. you have to hallucinate. Okay, here's Cecil. Can you see Cecil? Okay, you can see toxic granulation. Okay, so what you're trying to do is look for all these things in an infection. can you see that one? It's the only one I can see on here, maybe here, but right here. So it's just a little blue area. It's called the Dooley body. Okay, the other thing you're going to look at is vacuolization. Because these are phagosomes, so they're not going to stain. This is where they're phagocytizing all these bacteria. So this is, again, geared up to produce cells so that you're trying to take down the bacterial number. So if you look for toxic granulation, sessile bodies, Dooley bodies, and vacuoles, it tells you that you've got an infection. So they're going to occur probably together. So it should give you a hint to look for things. So here's vacuolization. So that's pretty easy to tell, isn't it? Look at all of them. So that's a pretty active cell. Okay, so that's infection.
Was that last one neutrophil, though? It looked more
no, it's a monocyte. But they're still phagocytes.
And you can get vacuoles in your neutrophils as well?
Right. Because it just represents a phagosome. Okay, another thing that we're going to see that might be abnormal is called an hour rod. And an hour rod is formed when you get azuric phyllic granules that are not formed right. So it's kind of a reddish crystal appearance. And they have to occur usually in granulocytes, but they occur early when you're forming the primary granules. So you'd see it, you could see it in a myeloblast, promyelocyte. And they're just this little red inclusion that you see. So it's malformed azurophilic granules. And it usually occurs in leukemias. But what it helps us do is to identify that that's a granulocyte or a monocyte, but usually a granulocyte. So here's a myeloblast. Can you tell this is a myeloblast? So right here is an hour rod. So right here. So that helps us to know that that's a myeloblast. Probably won't occur in a lymphoblast. Okay, we also can get necrobiotic neutrophils. And these cells are cells that we really shouldn't count. Because remember, you're not supposed to count cells that are degrading. So we wouldn't count these. We call them skipocytes, right? Because you skip over them. But they really are necrobiotic neutrophils. In other words, they've given their all and they're dying. So we wouldn't count them, but just so you know what they are.
Sorry. So if you do see a lot of those dying ones that you don't count, should you make a note of that anyway?
You probably would do another smear, make sure it's not an artifact. Okay, we also have what's called Alder-Reilly bodies. And this occurs in an inherited disease that's called Alder-Reilly anomaly. And what these are these cytoplasmic granules, these blue ones. They're uniformly distributed in a seg, and they are mucopolysaccharides that have accumulated in the lysosomes. So it's called Alder-Reilly bodies, but the syndrome is Alder-Reilly anomaly. So they're mucopolysaccharides. So here is a cell that's an Alder-Reilly anomaly with Alder-Reilly bodies. Okay? Now, how can you tell that from a basophil?
It's
not blue enough and not big enough granules. But it looks like somebody took a shotgun and just shot that cell, so it's all over. So it's mucopolysaccharide. Okay, Shediac Higashi have large azurophilic granules. Remember, they have defective microtubules, so they can't function as well. So this is the cells in Shediac Higashi syndrome. You can have maybe one granule or you can have other granules, but they're red rather than purple, reddish pink. So you can have them in eosinophils, you can have them in lymphocytes, monocytes, segmented neutrophils, you can have them in anything. But what you'll do is you'll look for more than one, so that if you saw this, these granules are abnormal. Look how huge they are. So this is a Shediac Higashi. If I had a lymphocyte, it might be a little more pink than purple. But I don't think, is there anything you could get it mixed up with that I can't think of anything. They're really quite big. Okay, another one is called a faggot cell. Now, a faggot is a bundle of sticks, in case you didn't know the definition of a faggot. And these bundle of sticks are multiple hour rods that have stacked on each other. So a faggot cell is a cell that contains these bodies, these hour bodies, that have kind of coalesced. So here's some promyelocytes. So see how they've stuck together right here? There's some up here, there's some over here, some down here. Okay, those are faggot cells.
Do they indicate different disease than the hour rods?
Faggot cells are usually found in a leukemia called promyelocytic leukemia rather than a myelocytic leukemia. So,
correct myself, or what slide are you? It looked like there was an alternate term. I was wondering if we need to know the sultan bodies. Is that, do we need to know that or not?
No. Okay. Faggot cells.
On this slide, so where you pointed out, what's that thing above it? It doesn't look part of the cell, actually.
This?
Yeah.
It's a red cell. It's smashed.
Okay.
Okay. You might also see some intracellular organisms, because if the bacteria are out in the bloodstream, these are going to be phagocytizing out there. Anytime you have bacteria out in the bloodstream, it's not a good sign. It's sepsis. So you might see some bacteria outside of the cell, but you might also see, if you were able to stain this, you might also see bacteria inside of a cell. But you'd also see all the toxic changes that we talked about. So you can see that in that cell. They even drew these so you could see the Dolly bodies. Mine aren't that good. Okay, so here's a cell that's ingested bacteria. So these are the bacteria inside of the cell. Now, when you start seeing bacteria in the background, bad sign. This was actually taken from a BYU student who had been on, they used to send him on survival. And he got the plague out eating, I think it was a squirrel. And they'd skinned the squirrel, and he'd gotten plague from that, Yersinia pestis, and had gotten septic. He didn't make it, but because they were clear out in some desert. But you could see bacteria just all over in his bloodstream.
How long ago was that?
It's a few, I don't know, 20 years.
If I just saw that, I'd probably say, okay, those are large blue granules. Is that
there's no term that we've used that's just large blue granules. You wouldn't call it Shediac Higashi. What would you call it? Not toxic. Yeah.
So is it personable to see, here and there, to see bacteria within cells, but not the bloodstream?
You'd probably hunt around and find some in the bloodstream if they're that full.
Yeah.
Okay, May Hegland. Okay, May Hegland has to have three things happen in order for you to tell it's May Hegland. So I wrote down the three things over here. You see Dolly-like bodies. These really aren't true Dolly Bali, but they're Dolly-like because there's no toxic changes. So you see these blue things. Then you have to see a decrease in platelet numbers. Do you know what the platelet numbers are normally yet? 150 to 450 per cubic millimeter. Okay. So we'd have to tell you there's a thrombocytopenia, which means less than 150. And then you have to see enlarged platelets. This is a giant platelet. So if you have those three things, you have Mayhegglin, and it's inherited. So here's a patient who has Mayhegglin. Okay, can you see this Dolly? Okay, so he has a Dolly-like body. He has pretty big platelets, wouldn't you see? And then we'd have to give you the platelet count to tell you it's thrombocytopenia.
Is it causing
problems? Not usually. It's just inherited. Okay, this is an LE cell. LE stands for what? Lupus erythematosus. You need to say lupus, right? It's easier. Okay, an LE cell has to be made in the laboratory. You don't have them circulating in you if you have lupus, okay? We have to do it in the lab to make them happen. So what we do is we take some nuclei material, we offer it to some PMNs, they phagocytize it. So this is a PMN that swallowed this hematoxylin body, which is DNA. So we've made the hematoxylin bodies artificially, and we've let the phagocytes go to work on them. And then we stain them, and we look to see if they've swallowed it. And so it's called an LE cell. So it's very diagnostic of lupus, because this is made by having antibody against DNA. Okay, so here is a kind of summary of things we're going to see in white cells. So we're going to see toxic granulation. Okay, that's an infection usually. We can see Alder Riley. That's mucopolysaccharidosis. We can see Dolly bodies. So infection, right? Shetty Akagashi. So it's an inherited disorder where the microtubules don't function properly and you get these granules big, though. We can see our bodies or our rods because of fusion of primary granules. We can see vacuoles, which indicates phagocytes doing a lot. And then you can see all sorts of ingested material. Here's our bacteria that have been ingested. Okay, we also can see abnormal maturation. So in B12 folic acid deficiency, where you have the asynchrony, one of the things you're going to find are giant cells, because not only the red cells are affected, but also white cells. So this is a metamyelocyte, but it's huge. So we call it a giant metamyelocyte. So here's a real giant metamyelocyte. Okay, this is a meta, right? Because it's indented. Look how huge it is. Okay, this is a normal size, probably eosinophil, it didn't stain too well. Here's a normal size lymphocyte. So this is huge. This one's indented too, so you'd call that another giant metamyelocyte. So when you see giants, folic acid or vitamin B12. What's this right here? Polychromatophilic normoblast. So this has got some pink in it, so we know it's making hemoglobin, but look how delicate this is. Shouldn't be that delicate. Remember, there's asynchrony.
Is this
out
in the peripheral blood?
It is. Okay, if they don't divide right, or if something doesn't look right, we call it dysgranulopoiesis. So remember, dyserythropoiesis, you can have the same thing happen with granulocyte. This doesn't look right. There's no granules. Just doesn't look like. Okay, so tomorrow we'll do these. All right, so tomorrow we start on anemia.
Say it then. Anemia
will not be on the test.
Thank you.